90 years, Piasecki Funeral Home. Welcome to Generation Now, the show highlighting the culture of now. I'm Troy McDonald. Retailers, restaurants, and bars are all looking for ways to bring you out of DoorDash and Uber Eats and to create unique experiences in store. My guest today looked all over the country and picked Kenosha, Wisconsin for his latest experiential venture. It's called Checkpoint Bar, a new gamer culture infused bar soon to open here in Kenosha. Please welcome the owner, Milton Ausland, to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
The story that I've been told, because I had talked with my boss about your story, was that you were looking all over the country and you saw Kenosha on a map and said, this is where I'm going to operate. Why did you pick Kenosha for this venture?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that, but ultimately the short answer is that the numbers worked, the culture and what Kenosha already had in place, what it had to offer as far as a culture, a geek community, where it's headed, what the developments are happening around. It all worked. It all made sense. It checked off all our boxes in a way. So, you know, one of the things we were looking for a couple of months, and I was sitting in a room with Stephanie Sachi. She's been working with me doing marketing for years, and she's been a great voice over the last 10 years, always sort of pushing and reminding me, hey, remember, what's up with the bar? You know, we're going to do the bar or what? And we were making a top 10 list, and my fiance, you know, in Japan, she just emailed us this listing on LoopNet for this location. And it seems serendipitous, you know, to have it have been a geek it was an arcade bar prior, this last iteration. And, you know, just looking at the map we created a Google map of what was around the location, other venues, other bars, what was happening in town. There's a development happening a half mile down on the south from me. On the east, there's another development, a couple million dollars going up of new locations. There's a $400 million development going down a half mile towards the west of me with the old Chrysler plant area. You know, the town has worked hard to bring in new people. It's one of the fastest growing locations around in Wisconsin, one of the fastest growing cities. You know, there's already a great geek culture here. You have Studio Moonfall, you have My Animix, you have Colossal Games, you have Marbleheads. You know, these are all great local geek, you know, mom and pop owned geek stores, you know, comic shops and whatnot. And so it just made sense. It helped. And then looking at a property, you know, one of the reasons why a lot of places have closed over the years because of COVID and whatnot is because they can't make their rent. That's a huge expense and whatnot. And looking at opening a venue back in New York City, where we first started to really sit down and crunch the numbers and write a business plan in like 2013, you know, we said this is insane. You know, people want $15,000 a month in rent, a month up to a year or two before you can get your liquor license or bar license. So we always knew we wanted to go owner operated so that we can bring that cost down and just so live at the location. And then that would serve instead of having two mortgages, if you will. So it just kind of worked. The numbers worked. The culture was there. The people were there and everyone's been really receptive. So it kind of all made sense. While there's always risk in making a decision of where you want to go and what you want to do, I think it's always important to kind of, you know, mitigate that risk and just kind of make a decision where it's going to be in your favor. For me, because we were putting everything on the line and we were really making a big move to move to another state, we wanted to make sure that everything made sense and all those boxes were checked. And Kenosha just came out of nowhere. We saw the place on a Thursday. We flew in on a Saturday. We made a bid on a Monday. So a little.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
Solomon Grundy start, I guess.
Yeah. You know, that's so fascinating because you're originally from New York.
Yes.
And I remember I'm a millennial. So when I grew up, if you were called a geek, that was like, oh right. My God, one of the most derogatory things you could be called is a geek, a nerd. So for you to say geek, it's almost like you're taking the power back in that word. And you mentioned all the different businesses. So could you talk about how the geek community over the last, I'd say, decade or so has really reclaimed that word and has made it their a badge of honor, really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a little different for me. You know, where I grew up in Brooklyn, originally was my area was called Flatbush. It was a really bad area. You know, if I wanted friends to come over, they would take the subway over to Cotelli Road and I'd have to escort them from the train station to my neighborhood. And you know, I'd ride my bike around the block and people would jump out to kind of steal the bike from me. And people would look at me, oh, that's Milton. He's okay. He's from around the corner. So gunshot. I mean, I did a paper on it during my grad work. It was something like 15,000 or 20,000 serious crimes a year when I was growing up. So it was intense, but I had a great sort of community sort of around me, very accepting. You know, a lot of the hoodlums are wannabe gang members in my area were into comic books. You know, that's really where it started. And my mother was a huge nerd and whatnot. And that really played a big influence. So, and my size really helped because really early on, you know, I shot up to 6 foot by the time I was 14. So, and I went into Boy Scouts. So, and I became an Eagle Scout. So I had all these things kind of working together. And I kind of realized early on in high school that, you know, some of my friends were getting picked on by accident. Well, they weren't my friends. I just saw these kids in a lunchroom getting picked on. And I sort of, all that kind of combined, you know, together to kind of rage kind of came out. Of, you know, having come from my neighborhood, coming to this high school, you know, I didn't think these other kids knew what drama or what violence really was. And I wound up sticking up for a friend of mine who became a friend, and he was a huge nerd. And so I sort of became a bully of bullies in a way, sort of protecting other people who were smaller than me. Growing up in that environment, it was weird because you had all these people coming out in the neighborhood doing their thing, you would think it was a bad neighborhood, but no one really bothered a kid wearing Ray-Bans and a Batman shirt. You know, it was almost like I was too weird for everyone to mess with. And because I was surrounded and protected with like the people in my neighborhood and my block, you know, no one messed with me. So I had a bubble around me. And I remember once getting jumped in junior high school, my first day there. And the next day, like 40 people showed up. My sister showed up with like 40 people, you know, and was like, Milton's one of us, don't mess with him. And I never had a problem again, you know? So I was lucky to kind of have that bubble created around me. And then I guess when I got older, I started to extend that bubble, you know? And part of that got me into organizing events early on when I was 18, putting people together. Because I thought it was crazy that all these people could be at each other's throats, but all of a sudden put that aside for an event and a party. And, you know, I started doing shows and I did, that carried me all the way through to my undergrad. And early on, when I was 21, I was leaving to go to my undergrad. My aunt asked me what I wanted to do when I was done. And I said, I want to open up a bar. But it really wasn't until 2010 or 2008 that really geek culture really started to explode, especially in New York City, because New York City had Big Apple Con for a long time. And then because of the success of San Diego Comic Con, which started, you know, in the 60s, 70s, Reed Pop came into the scene in New York around that time and officially created the New York Comic Con. So I was at a, so that was happening, and I returned to New York City after being gone for, you know, about a decade or more. I was at a corporate event at this new job I had, and I was standing in a circle of people, and everyone started making fun of this guy that worked there in the marketing department. They're making fun of him, and I just sort of, I was half paying attention, and I said, what's going on? And they were making fun of Adam, and I said, well, what's wrong with Adam? And someone turned to me and said, he likes Star Wars. And I said, okay. So, and they started cracking all these jokes. And I said to him, well, you know, I kind of stood up a little straighter. I said, well, I like Star Wars. I love Star Wars. Star Wars is awesome, you know? And it was as if I was became a traitor in their midst. You know, they all looked at me like, oh no, he's one of them, kind of. And they didn't know what to do with me because I didn't fit that stereotype of what they felt a nerd was or geek was. And I went over to Adam and introduced myself, and we linked up. He had a group called New York Sci-Fi Fantasy that was organizing events in New York City. And it was mostly like quiet events. You know, we'd book a back room of a bar and we'd watch a Star Wars viewing, or maybe it was like, you know, there were offshoots of it where we'd have a book club and whatnot. But slowly, you know, because of the mainstream media and the Avengers and those types of movies coming out. I mean, when we grew up, it was Blade, and it was people were trying. It was a Daredevil with Ben Affleck. So there are a lot of misses, you know. But you had people like Kevin Smith coming up that really kept hounding it and kept that foundation going. I mean, look, Nicolas Cage had one of the largest comic book collections in the world, you know. So it was people out there in the mainstream media and that was really having it come up. But when New York Comic Con exploded, it almost became like a free pass for everyone to say, this is okay. You know, we don't need to be quiet anymore. It's okay for us to want to have a drink and party and want to date and do all those things. You know, we're human. We do those things as well. So, you know, it became okay to be a nerd in the mainstream. And then sort of the underground sort of took that and came out, you know, lightsabers blazing, if you will.
that's beautiful. And so what you were able to do is you were able to kind of foster that community and build the infrastructure there, which so many people are doing right now. As I said at the top, Uber Eats, DoorDash, especially among young consumers, retailers are struggling to create that experience. So how have you done that through your experience, and how do you see that manifesting now at Checkpoint in a digital first world? How do you create that in-person camaraderie?
Well, you know, for me, early on, it's all about security, you know, in creating a safe space, you know, not just physically, but also mentally. And I think that goes into taking that word back, giving people the confidence to know that there's other people that have your back out there, and that it's, you have a community to say that it's okay. You know, so I think for an event, in a venue in particular, it's really important. Security cannot be, you can't get enough of it. And it's not about, like I said, having people there to break up a fight or something happens. It's more about speaking to your clientele, knowing your audience, who they're concerned about, and dealing with those issues in advance, because you're creating the safe space, right?
Right. And that's extremely important. We've seen in Kenosha recently bars who have had issues and who have lost their licenses and have had to shutter operations. And so obviously that is so great that you've gone into this knowing that and having the experience, you know, setting those boundaries. But as far as, you know, creating the ambiance, right? The experience right. That customers are going to go to.
Oh yeah.
How do you go about building that in this market? And especially in a world where all of this stuff is, you know, digital, right? So how do you bring people inside and create a fun environment?
Well, I think, you know, it happened organically for us. I mean, like I said, way back in 2013, we were planning this and we had some designs, and at my apartment at the time, we were renovating. We had gotten rid of all, we had bed bugs for like a week, and in my experience to residential housing and dealing with bed bugs, I said, look, you know, let's get rid of all our furniture, throw everything away furniture wise. And we do the whole process of dealing with the bed bugs. And I'm really good at it and have friends who have extermination company, but we were left with no furniture, and we're hanging out with a friend of mine, Katie Maslow, and she just looked over and said, hey, what are those? And those are designs for your bar, you know, some of the things you want to build there. And she said, well, why don't you do that? So really that started us this process of taking our concepts and the stuff that we like in the media and the digital world that you see online when you're watching your Doctor Who, when you're streaming Doctor Who, or you're watching Indiana Jones again, and bringing it into the physical world and putting it all in one place. So we built a TARDIS. We built a Han Solo Star Wars booth. You can find all that. You can find some of those images on our Instagram on Checkpoint Kenosha. So that really became our concept. So for us, that's how we plan to do it, and that's what we intend to do. That's one of the reasons why you see behind me the Teenage Mutant Turtles. That's the design of the bar here. And while that's a 2D image, you know, you have to envision long term that maybe the space behind me will be, the wall will be built out to replicate the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles lair. Okay. And another section of the bar will look like a Ghostbusters basement with a containment unit. And one corner of the bar will be a giant life-size TARDIS. Okay. Another corner of the bar would be a Han Solo booth from Star Wars. A booth will be designed like TNG Star Trek with the console in the middle, lights up. So I think it's really important to bring the physical things in that gives people an opportunity to connect the physical with the digital, because now you have a place where people can come in, they can interact with things they love and take pictures with it and post it online. And then I think that's the connection of it.
Right. I think that that is exactly right, to give them almost a touch point for what they're experiencing online. Mm-hmm. I think you're riding a real new wave here. I mean, there's the food hall market in Milwaukee, Third Market Hall. And what they're realizing is that it's not just the drink or the food, right? It's about the gaming, and they have gaming consoles. They have shuffleboard there. So it's about creating all of these different experiences. How have you thought about that? Are you going to have game consoles there? Like, how do you envision some of the events that will take place in that space?
It's funny you mentioned that, because just the other day, someone posted on our Facebook saying, please have a screen with a console with Smash Brothers on it. So we're going to start out with, you know, tabletop board game is huge around here. It was pretty much invented near here. And so that's really our two touch points, where we're going to be bringing arcades back. We know that's a big thing in this area. We know people want it, and pinball machines, but we're going to have tables where people can play board games. We're going to work with some local vendors, some local companies like MyAnimix and Colossal Games and Marbleheads, to talk to them of what do we need to do to have great tabletop tables for people to play games or Pokemon and whatnot. So we're going to start with that, and then, you know, speak to our clientele, speak to our patrons. I know someone wants Smash Brothers, so we're going to try to, you know, we've already discussed how can we incorporate that. You know, where can we put a screen, a drop screen, where people can play, but also people can watch tournament play and whatnot. So we're just going to look to sort of slowly introduce different features as time goes on. For us, it's not, we're here, we're not going anywhere, you know, so for us, it's a marathon, it's not a race. You know, we're just looking to open the doors with the bare bones and then keep adding on as we speak to our clientele in the community and sort of customize the place to the local community and what they want.
There are a lot of people who are listening who might not want to start a checkpoint, you know, like bar. That actually probably be a dumb idea with how smart you are at business to compete. But there might be young people say, I want to start something. I want to start a business. You've done this for years now. In the hardest moments, in the toughest moments, what gets you through? What carries you through, you know, those dark times?
Well, you know, COVID was probably the darkest moment for me, because everything stopped. I couldn't do any events. Really, it was having a good support system of just one or two people. And again, my friend Stephanie Sacchi, if it wasn't for her, there would be no checkpoint, because she was just a constant reminder, the constant, you know, person in my ear. No matter what, we could be talking about the weather and she'll just turn the conversation to, have you worked on the business plan? You know, don't give up on this, you know, because she believed in it so much. And my fiance as well, just pushing me in that direction. You don't need, you know, one of the most important things people need to understand is that no one's going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. Okay. You have to teach yourself in this day and age you can. And two, you need a small, dedicated team. It could just be you and one other person, and then that's all you need. You know, give me three strong people and we'll take over the world, you know, rather, because when we first started this idea, there was 20 of us. Okay. And over the course of the years, that dropped down, you know, depending upon what we were doing. If we were promoting and at Comic-Con and someone would cancel and then it would flake again. If we were trying to do the Kickstarter and you know, it just dwindled down to a team of three, you know? So I think the most important thing is just understanding that you may have to go it alone, and that's going to be tough, you know, because there's no one going to be in your, you may not have a Stephanie or Leanna to kind of motivate you and keep you going, you know? And for that, when in those times when I didn't have Leanna, because we've only been together about 5 years, and when me and Stephanie were doing our own thing, I created like a dream board in my living, in my bedroom. You know, I would literally post physical pictures of what I wanted this to be, what my goals were. And I would, and it wasn't even that complicated sometimes. I would just literally type up words or sentences on a sheet of paper using Microsoft Word saying, keep saving, you know, keep moving forward. And I would tape them literally everywhere. And I remember Leanna coming over once, and if you're laying in my bed and look up, literally as I open my eyes, there was a sign that says, do it today, you know, so that everywhere I woke up, I just kept reinforcing that thinking and that mindset, sort of programming my brain to keep moving forward, you know, in the worst of times, so that by the time I got out the door in the morning, I saw that on my bedroom ceiling, on the door frame of my bedroom, on the medicine cabinet mirror, on the door on the way out, you know, just constant reminders. And even my job, I had like a little business card taped to the side of the screen that says, check in, see what's going on, keep working on the business plan. You know, whatever it is I was working on, just to kind of constantly remind myself. So you have to kind of figure out a way to program yourself to move forward, other than having a tight, dedicated circle of people who are going to, you know, help you along the way. The problem with that is that when you have a big idea, it's hard for people to have big ideas and understand your big idea. If you want people, there's a famous line in one of my favorite movies called, if you want them to think big, you have to give them something big to think about. But that's a lot of effort to really explain an idea and get people to get that buy-in and be as excited as you are and to really see the concept. You know, I had one friend, every time I mentioned it, the first thing out of their mouth was, whoa, this sounds like a lot of work. It's really expensive. It's just like negative. And that's one of the first things I did, you know, if I moved away from New York Sci-Fi because I started to die out, as we all got older, I started making sure my circle was smaller. And if there was any negativity there, I cut them out, blocked them on Facebook, you know, friends, family, I didn't care who it was. I just kept making that circle smaller and smaller and smaller and kept the positivity going. So I think that's really one of the biggest factors for people trying to do things.
And I think too that to do that from your background, in which you explained at the top of the show, where you would have to escort your friends to your home to make sure that they would be okay, that you were jumped in junior high, right? To have that experience and to still have hope that you could create an environment for other people is big too. Because there's a lot of people who've been through similar things, maybe not as violent, hopefully not, but they've been through struggles and it's hard for them to even have hope because they're dealing with the trauma. So how did you deal with that trauma and say, not only am I going to succeed, I'm going to help and create an environment for other people who are marginalized and who are made fun of in society?
You know, for the longest time, I spent a lot of time helping other people. You know, you have trauma comes from negativity and bad experiences. So I try to offset that with a lot of positivity. You know, being involved in my old Boy Scout troop helped a lot. My old Scoutmaster, Mike Mann, and his wife, Marsha Kappaman, were a big influence in my life. And it was really weird to be in this neighborhood, going to this drama, and all of a sudden I'm going a block down the road to go to this Boy Scout troop. I ran to a friend of mine when I was like 11, and I was like, where are you going? Why are you in my neighborhood? Because he lived like a half mile away, and he was like, I'm going to Boy Scouts. And I was like, what's this? So it just really balanced. It helped. It gave me a little bit of a foundation to say, wait a second, there's other things out there, you know. So I think having that, I kept doing that throughout my life, you know. When I was down in the dumps, when it was hard, I would help other people, you know, what they were doing. You know, my friend wanted to do a hip hop show. I say, great, let's do it. Let's work together. And just to see that success, you know, just trying to stay positive by doing positive things and creating positive experiences for myself that kind of offset that. Even if it was just, you know, I had a goal once of like just losing weight, and I dropped like 50 pounds, just going to the gym, you know, just working out, seeing the results, just creating that positive, those positive experiences really kept me going. And that's what's important, I think. You know, you got to offset that. It's not hard to drag yourself out of bed.
And I want to thank you so much for sharing your story. And you mentioned the Instagram earlier on in the show. How can people keep up to date? And do you have like an anticipated open date? Like, where are you on your business plan to get things open for the community?
Well, like I said, for us, it's a marathon, not a race. And we're looking for like June, but I think it's going to probably be more like July, so maybe late July, August, because my fiance is going to be moving here as well. She's a fantastic artist. She's a painter. She teaches figure drawing, color theory, and whatnot. So there's a component of that, of just our personal life, you know, making sure that we're good to go holistically as a person. You know, we need to move the rest of our stuff here. I need to help ensure that she's got her studio built and whatnot, because we're going to be living upstairs and whatnot. So we want to make sure we're good to go there. So there's that aspect of it. So I like to, whenever I have a timeline, I try to build in some buffer. So I'd like to aim for June. I'm aiming for June, but I have no problem falling back to July or even early August. And even when we do open, we're not going to do a giant grand opening. You know, we don't want to flood the community with parking issues and noise issues, you know, so really people need to sort of pay attention to what's going on to us. Sorry, I'm just looking up that information. People really need to keep tabs on us on our Facebook. Our handle is at the Checkpoint Bar. And that's the best way to keep tabs on us, because when we start to open, it's going to be quiet. It's going to be a slow release. It's going to be a lot of soft openings, a lot of private events, a lot of D&D nights, you know, a lot of book birthday parties. And we will have opening night for the general public, but we may not necessarily make a big announcement about it and whatnot. But we will post, hey, we're going to be open tomorrow, on our Facebook page. You know, again, it's just keeping in mind the local community, what's happened in the community with bars and venues. We are in a residential area, so we want to be mindful of that. You know, not that I think 200 or 150 geeks waiting outside to come in is going to be a major problem or cause a big serious issue, but you got to err on the side of caution. And at the very least, is always traffic issues. And we're on a big, major, fast street where people drive very fast. So we want to be mindful for our patrons as well, them crossing and whatnot. So,
and this will be 52nd Street and 23rd Avenue, roughly.
22nd Avenue and 53rd. Yep. So at the Checkpoint Bar on our Facebook page is a great way to keep up with us. We do have an Instagram, Checkpoint Kenosha. Over the coming months, those two things will start to sort of blow up as we put out more content and whatnot. Once we get started building on like a TARDIS, you'll see those posts coming out more and more on our Instagram. But on our Facebook, it'll just be general updates as well.
It is so smart that you're doing that, because you're building that community relationship first, right? Mm-hmm. So many places open up and they expect the whole community to come. They don't know who they are. They don't trust them, right? So you're building that community trust first, as making it their space. And yes, then slowly, that's brilliant. I want to say thank you so much for sharing your story. And I think it will inspire a lot of people to, no matter what they're doing in their lives, to be better people and to get up, like you said, drag themselves out of bed and be better people. And no matter what they're going through, right, to be better people. And that's the whole essence of this show. So continued best wishes to you and to Checkpoint. And we'll be paying attention to the Facebook and Instagram for all the amazing things you're doing. Thank you so much.